Do you have a hard time finding Christian greeting cards and gifts that aren't either sappy or theologically suspect? Ad Crucem offers the perfect combination of art and the truth of the scriptures with beautiful and reverent greeting cards and gifts. Deliver the true comfort of the gospel, Christ crucified for sinners, to family and friends with Ad Crucem. ADCRUCEM.com. Confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com.
So recently there was a result, an observation, that appeared to confirm predictions made in the inflationary universe, which was an appendage to the Big Bang put forth back in the 1970s and refers to an early period of the universe, really early, like fractions of a second after the original explosion, where the universe has a rapid expansion, faster than the speed of light, rapid expansion. It is scientifically valid, that prediction and that idea. And it had a whole suite of expectations that you should look for if it were true.
The now familiar voice of Neil deGrasse Tyson. He is a cosmologist. He's a popularizer of that very complex science. And he's also recent host of Cosmos, a space-time odyssey, that 13-part TV series. Kind of the new, what do you want to think about him as a... as kind of the new face of cosmology, the popularized face of cosmology. And he's speaking there on CNN's Fareed Zakaria's GPS program. Is he being completely honest when he talks about this part of the Big Bang Theory called inflation? He called it an appendage to the Big Bang Theory. It really is a rescuing device for the Big Bang Theory. Is he being honest when he says it's made all these predictions and it's the predictions are all coming true? All the observations seem to be pointing toward the validity of inflation and therefore of the big theory, the Big Bang Theory. Joining us to talk about some recent comments made by Cosmos host Neil deGrasse Tyson on the Big Bang Theory, Dr. Danny Faulkner. He has a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University's Professor of Astronomy for Answers in Genesis. Dr. Faulkner, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd.
He says that there's almost like a checklist of predictions that inflation predicted, and that the observations over the years since the mid-70s when it was proposed have been just like going down a list. That one was right. That one was right. These predictions all proving true. Is he being completely honest about inflation?
Well, not entirely. I think he's kind of giving a simplified version. It's been a long, torturous path over the last 35 years. Actually, you could go back 50 years, I suppose, when the Big Bang first gained widespread acceptance in the 60s. But I've seen in my lifetime how that the Big Bang model has just morphed and changed at will. Every time you have a problem arise, you explain it away by something, and they keep changing the model. It bears almost no resemblance to the model of 30 years ago.
Okay, where did it come from? We've explained this before, but it always helps to walk back over the ground. The Big Bang Theory had a problem after some observations of what's usually called the, for lack of a better term, the background radiation.
Yeah, they usually abbreviate that to CMB for cosmic microwave background. So just call it, say CMB and make it a little easier. That was discovered 50 years ago, and it was was published up in the mid-60s. It became the big proof because the Big Bang Theory says that the universe began in a very hot, dense state. And a few hundred thousand years after the universe began, the radiation should have escaped from that and permeated the universe. And the competing theory at the time, which really was quite popular the first half of the 20th century, the steady state theory, it's an eternal universe, couldn't predict that. And so it kind of became the only game in town left was the Big Bang. And then this background radiation is over in the microwave part of the spectrum. It's not easy to detect, but it is detectable since the early 60s. And they've gotten more sophisticated about looking at structure in it and such to try to devise different alternatives in the within the Big Bang paradigm to get it to work. What they realized, though, is the temperature was almost identically the same in every direction, a little less than 3 degrees above absolute zero on the Celsius scale, or Kelvin scale. And that didn't seem reasonable because you would expect different parts of the universe initially would have different temperatures. So they asked the question, how could that be? This became known as the what they call the horizon problem. And then there's another problem dealing with what we call the geometry of the universe. It's called the flatness problem. And these were these looked like the universe was just, if within a Big Bang model, the universe began in a very improbable state, almost to the point that maybe somebody set it up that way or something. So they proposed this thing of inflation back about 35 years ago that in the very early part of the universe, like 10 to the minus 34 seconds after the Big Bang, we're talking like 0.00034 zeros before you get to a one. The universe went through this very rapid expansion, far faster than the speed of light, and that supposedly would solve the flatness and horizon problems. Everything would have been the same temperature before it got yanked out of what we say thermal contact. And so this became kind of the standard explanation in the 80s, and it was incorporated in the Big Bang model, even though there wasn't a shred of evidence for it. To this day, the big evidence, I guess we're going to talk about here in a minute, that Tyson talked about on the show, it's being debated even as we speak. And the difficulty is that they don't even know, beyond if it's real or not, they don't even know what causes it. It's just some hypothetical thing that happened in the early universe. They can't even agree on a mechanism for it.
Okay, so in a nutshell there, the temperatures, and we're talking about things that hardly qualify as temperatures, but they are temperatures.
Yeah.
The temperatures of this universally observed background radiation were too uniform to fit into the theory because in order for them to be that uniform, they had to have reached some sort of, I'm just going to use kind of layman's terms, thermal equilibrium.
That's not a layman's term at all. That's a technical term, but it's the exact term you want to use, thermal equilibrium, which means they've come to the same temperature.
And so they're saying, how did all these disparate parts of the universe, growing more disparate as this millennia pass, how did they possibly communicate thermal information back and forth at the time of the Big Bang? The theory is inflation accounts for this, but so little evidence now, or so zero evidence for such a thing. Now we come to this last year, when researchers in a group called BICEP2 claimed to be able to look at this background information and see something that they thought would be predicted there.
Yeah. I've gone to some astronomy meetings the last couple of years where the BICEP2 people have been giving talks, and BICEP1 and other, there are several other experiments going on. You have to do these in weird places like in Antarctica where it's very dry and cold and everything. They've been talking about this for some time. And I went to a meeting in January where it was being talked about, maybe in the near future we'll find this evidence. The whole point is if inflation happened, then it would cause what we call gravitational waves. And the gravitational waves then would imprint on the background radiation, the CMB, a certain pattern of polarization. And the polarization is just referring to the fact that radiation can be can kind of vibrate in one direction over another direction. Usually radiation will vibrate in every direction, but if it's vibrating more in one direction than another, we say that's partially polarized. And your radio broadcast going out right now, if it's on an FM, it's polarized. You can't help but do that. It's part of the way they do this stuff. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for a pattern, a certain characteristic pattern. And there were hints of it a few years ago. It turned out to be due to something else. And so then they announced on March 17th at a press conference, just what, 4 months ago, 5 months ago now? Yeah, 5 months ago, that they had found, the BICEP2 people had found this imprint that was predicted by the model. And at the time, the same day here at Answers in Genesis, we put up the same day, just a few hours later, kind of a response. And I put down three possibilities that could be a problem for it. And I've got them right in front of me. I'll read the third one. It says, third, other mechanisms could mimic the signal being claimed today. So even if the data are confirmed, there may be some other physical mechanisms at play rather than cosmic inflation. And sure enough, that's the route that some other critics have taken on this. And these are not coming from creationists. These are other people who are persuaded of the Big Bang or some other alternate cosmology, but not a biblical one. And they've been going after this because they had to remove the effect of cosmic dust, or dust in there, actually galactic dust, the little particles of microscopic particles in the galaxy, and those and other nearby galaxies as well. And those particles can impart polarization to the CMB. And they used a particular model to remove the effect of that. They kind of massaged the data, as it were, to remove the effect of that dust, what they thought the effect was, and then what remained was supposedly the signal of inflation. But other astronomers and cosmologists and physicists have jumped on this, saying, wait a minute, you've not modeled this correctly, and what you're seeing is actually the imprint of dust on the polarization signature. And that's been the big complaint so far, and it's not Danny Faulkner speaking, it's a bunch of other secular astronomers speaking on that.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation on some recent comments made by Cosmos host Neil deGrasse Tyson on the Big Bang Theory and one of its sub-theories, inflation. Dr. Danny Faulkner has a Ph.D. in astronomy from Indiana University and is professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
Religion or astronomy? Started with the Big Bang.
Music and mythology.
Einstein and astrology. It all started with the Big Bang.
It all started with the Big Bang.
No matter the size, big or small, RP Lumber can deliver it all. From pickups to one-tons to box trucks and booms, everywhere you look, you see blue. RP Blue. RP prides itself in customer service. RP will deliver quality products to your home, business, or job site. And you can be sure of timely delivery on clean trucks with courteous drivers. So when you think of service, think blue. RP Blue. With over 50 local community locations, for 37 years, RP Lumber.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.
Hymnody is important, very important. It's an invaluable tool that helps teach and confess the faith. Singing hymns is something we all do together on a weekly basis, yet some congregations find it difficult to sing confidently without the support of an instrument. If you are one of these congregations that can't find an organist, Church Music Solutions can help. Our substitute organist service allows your hymns and liturgy to be played on your instrument to help inspire and support your congregation's song. Keep singing with Church Music Solutions.
You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org.
There's an app for that.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We talk to the biggest names in religion today. Liberal Bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took five loaves and two fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues Etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org.
There is a boundary between what is known and unknown, and some percent of our species is curious about the answers to that, to what lies on the other side of that boundary, and they explore it.
All right, so you're...
So we can say, let's not explore. Go ahead. Here's a ticket back to the cave. I'll meet you there. We'll build a fire together.
That, again, is the familiar voice of Neil deGrasse Tyson, host of Cosmos and a popularizer of all things scientific, especially the Big Bang Theory, drawing a contrast. I don't know if it's an entirely fair contrast between those who want to explore the universe and everybody else who apparently would be happier living in a cave. We'll talk about that in a second. We're responding to some of the comments made by Neil deGrasse Tyson with Dr. Danny Faulkner of Answers in Genesis. Dr. Faulkner, I want to come back to something that we were talking about before the break. Tyson is no slouch. He knows his stuff. He really does. And he has a unique talent of being able to, in a very affable way, explain it to people. I was very impressed in listening to his explanations when he was speaking there on CNN, off the cuff, without, you know, writers or anything like that. Why does he not simply say, look, this is a good theory. I like the theory. It helps the Big Bang Theory. But the most recent research may not prove what the researchers themselves had at first claimed to prove.
Yeah, well, you're right. He's a very affable fellow. He's a very articulate person. He's a fantastic spokesman. That's why he gets picked to do those kind of interviews and why he's tapped to be on Cosmos. As for why he doesn't, I guess, shed all the dirty laundry here, I guess that's just not what he wants to do in a popular venue. I mean, the sort of issue that I raised earlier about complaints that this is probably a signal, it's a false signal coming from dust, he considers that inconsequential. That in itself is controversial. So he's deciding to side with the idea that this has been proved, and let's just move on to the next area of discussion. He's not interested in going off the reservation, as it were, and looking at other possibilities at this point. There's a lot invested in this. I mean, if you give up on the Big Bang, what's left? We have 50 years of cosmology, thousands and thousands of articles written. If for some reason tomorrow we decided the Big Bang is not correct, then that means that everything, and I do mean literally everything, written on cosmology for the past half century is wrong. And that would be a major scientific revolution, and people don't march off the scientific revolutions willingly. They have to be grabbed and dragged screaming the whole way. That's been the nature of the beast all along. So I don't think the problems have risen up to the level that most astronomers and physicists would consider worthy of rewriting the books at this point.
Can they explain? It's one thing to say, look, we've found the possible data that is predicted, the possible observations that are predicted by inflation. Okay, it's one thing to say that, even if that were the case, which it isn't entirely. Can they explain why inflation occurred and why it stopped occurring?
No, that's one of the big mysteries if you start looking and reading a little deeper. Many people have put forth these theories, different versions of theories about what has happened in the past, why the inflation happened, some sort of field perhaps drove it, but the nature of the field, why it happened, why it went away. Those are all theoretical physical ideas that probably can never be actually verified. So that's the point I made earlier, is the fact that there's some question about the reality of the data. And then the second question is, what's going on physically? And nobody knows. We can't get an agreement on that.
I think the only, and my memory might fail me here, but the only kind of honest accounting for this that I've read and I read a lot of the popular versions of this science came from a guy who wrote a book called The First 3 Minutes, I think it was. It's been years since I read the book.
Well, Steven Weinberg, he wrote that back in the 70s.
And I believe that he just simply, if I recall correctly, he just simply kind of threw up his hands and said it kind of has to have happened. In order for to kind of account for everything that we're looking at here, and then went on to talk about the rest of the 3 minutes. Of course, inflation is supposed to have happened in a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of the first second. Do you find honest dealers in the ideas?
Well, Steven Weinberg comes close. I remember if you read the last two paragraphs of that book, The Big Bang, the first 3 minutes, excuse me. It's a really sad assessment of the situation. He is very pessimistic about the world, because it's taking it from an atheistic worldview. And he does get honest about things at points. I think he's had some frustration in this, in the sense that a lot of unanswered questions, this thing seems to be very ad hoc. It's just been made up to salvage the theory. And how do you test for something like that? How do you disprove, at least potentially, can you actually conceive of an experiment or a measurement or an observation you could do that actually disprove this idea? It's a fantastic sort of philosophical idea, but it's not really science. That's the thing that most people seem to miss. Just because scientists say it so doesn't make it so. They have a vested interest in making this model work. Otherwise, the alternative is unthinkable.
Danny Faulkner is our guest. He has a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University. He is professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. On this Monday afternoon, August the 18th, we're talking about some recent comments made by Cosmos host Neil deGrasse Tyson on the Big Bang Theory and inflation.
Be ready always to give a reason, an apologia, a reason for the hope that is within you, yet with gentleness and reverence.
Craig Parton, speaking at this year's Issues Etc., Making the Case Conference.
There is the apologetical task in a nutshell. Not with arrogance or beating people up or I gotcha, I got a snazzy answer to every question, but in humility, God has allowed us to stand on the shoulders of giants in apologetics. It grieves me that we are so generally ignorant about apologetics and the heritage we have been given as Christians.
You can listen to Craig Parton's presentation, Making the Case for the Historical Jesus, on an audio DVD from the Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300. For more information, look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Hear us who might deceive us.
The 21st century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Danny Faulkner of Answers in Genesis is our guest. We're talking about some recent comments made by Cosmos host Neil deGrasse Tyson on the Big Bang Theory. Before the break, I had mentioned that book, The First 3 Minutes, and then I'm glad to have my memory confirmed on that. Another book that I read more recently by Lee Smolin called The Trouble with Physics, and I was fascinated by this guy because he knows his stuff, but he's extremely frustrated. He basically sets forth the idea that physics and cosmology are stuck. They're stagnant. For the last 80 years, no real good new ideas. And he blames string theory and a bunch of other stuff like that as not being genuine science. But I wonder what you think, Danny. Is it possible that if he's right, Smolin is right, that, cosmology and science are kind of stuck in this 80-year rut because they won't let go of some of these basic ideas put forth about 100 years ago?
Now, I haven't read this book that you mentioned, but I'm familiar with the concept you're talking about. It's really easy to get stuck in a rut and to keep, you know, pounding your head against the wall. And if it's correct, then what you're doing, then that's fine. But if it's incorrect, then you're going to generate a lot of garbage along the way and build up a lot of resistance. You know, I think we talked about this a few months ago. I brought this one point up, but I think it bears repeating. There was a man who lived 19 centuries ago. His name was Claudius Ptolemy. He was one of the final, the last word in ancient astronomy. And he wrote this book, comes down to us, called the Almagest. And in that book, he put forth what we call the Ptolemaic model, the idea that the Earth is the center. It's a geocentric model. And you have to explain the motion of the sun, the moon, and the planets. And the way he did this, a series of circles on circles called epicycles, like little gears turning within gears. And if you're able to adjust the size and the rotation rate of the gears and the number of gears or epicycles, you could mimic the motions of the five naked eye planets and the sun and the moon pretty well. And this became the standard cosmology for the next 15 centuries. It really wasn't discarded until the 1600s. And during this time, whenever a discrepancy would occur, they would just simply throw in a few more epicycles, a few more gears on gears on gears on gears. So by the time you got to the early 17th century, some systems had well over 100 little epicycles and gears running. The thing is, the system worked. Even today, you could make it work and compute planetary positions with it. But it was discarded mainly because it was very complicated. But people are going to realize that this thing was unwieldy. And ultimately, if you can fix something forever, you can continue to make a wrong theory work no matter what. And I've seen the Big Bang, you mentioned the last 80 years or so, the Big Bang has been modified, and inflation is just one thing, but they throw in string theory, as you mentioned. They've thrown in now dark matter, dark energy came back in, which is a variation on Einstein's cosmological constant. They've changed the rate of the expansion. The model has morphed tremendously, and every time they've done this was to meet challenges of new data. And just as the Ptolemaic model could not be disproved, the Big Bang theory is gaining that sort of thing, that sort of status. And I fear that this book you referred to is correct. The Big Bang model is fundamentally flawed, I believe. And you can continue to make it work, but only by changing it again and again and again. And if you cannot disprove a model, at least in theory, you can't disprove it. It can meet every new challenge by adding new effects. Then is it really a scientific theory? It seems more like it's more of a philosophical one.
Now, we heard earlier Neil deGrasse Tyson, and I think he was trying, it was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but he was saying, look, there's a portion of the population that does want to explore the world, kind of implying that there's a portion that is not curious about these things and is not interested in exploring the world. And he says, if you don't want to explore, then it's your ticket back to the cave. Or I think he's implying they're back to a dark age where science no longer has anything to say. What do you make of his comments?
Well, it was a little over the top, perhaps. I think his answer was in response to the question, well, what good is this for? The host was picking his words very carefully. It seemed like, well, so what? What does anybody care? Can you make a better product? It will affect our lives. And I think we astronomers are a little sensitive about that, because ultimately astronomy by its very nature is not real practical. People love to learn about stuff, about, you know, the heavens around us. But it's not like physics or chemistry or even biology, where you can make new drugs, you can make new products and all this kind of stuff. And so astronomers have to answer that question frequently. And again, we're a bit sensitive. And I think that's what he was trying to answer, was what good is cosmology? Well, aren't you curious about the world around you? If not, then doesn't that take you back to caveman days? It's kind of his response to that. I think that's what he was saying there.
Do Christians who question these prevailing popular, almost axiomatic theories, are they displaying a lack of curiosity about the world around them?
No, not of course not. I'm very curious about the world. I've just got a different set of assumptions from other people. And to say that I'm not curious, well, that's just not right. That's not true at all.
So do Christians have every good reason, not only based in kind of natural curiosity and science, but also based in the faith, to be curious
absolutely.
About the world?
Yeah, I think Christians invented science in the 17th century. You've heard the phrase, thinking God's thoughts after him. It was took a biblical worldview, a Protestant worldview, in order to make science possible. And many people have made this case, not just me, but many before me have made the case that people who took the Bible very seriously and Christianity very seriously invented science. It belongs to us. It's the atheists that hijacked it the next century. But we're a curious folk, and the other fellow creationists I know, scientists I know, they're just as curious as I am. So just because you disagree with us doesn't mean we're not curious.
Finally, then, do Christians have anything to fear in genuine scientific observation and inquiry?
Absolutely not. I'm not afraid of science at all. I wouldn't be a scientist if I were. We love science, and that's a very common misconception people have of creationists, is they think we're anti-science. Nothing could be further from the truth. We just have a fundamental disagreement about some of the foundational assumptions being made.
Dr. Danny Faulkner has a PhD in astronomy from Indiana University, and he is professor of astronomy for Answers in Genesis. Dr. Faulkner, it's always a pleasure, and thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Suzanne Venker. We don't often go to our celebrities, much less our pop singers, for good advice, good kind of decisions about life. Very lately, pop singer Katy Perry was being interviewed by Rolling Stone. She said, "I don't need a dude." She means I don't need a man. She wants to be a mother, but then she's going to, if a guy doesn't come around, the right guy doesn't come around. She's already had a couple bites at the apple. She plans on being a mother without a man. Of course, she's worth $40 million. That kind of helps there. But even if you were, does that mean you don't need a man and that your children don't need a father? We'll talk with Suzanne Venker, author of the books The War on Men and The Flip Side of Feminism, about Katy Perry's comments and the importance of fathers in Hour 2 of Issues, etc. Pastor Tom Baker will join us after that. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson on one of Paul's shipwrecks. We know that he was shipwrecked more than once, but Acts give us the account of one of the more notorious ones. Shipwreck, stranded, no one dies. We'll talk about that in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. with Pastor Tom Baker of Long Gospel. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues, Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Westminster, Massachusetts. Redeemer Lutheran, Fairhope, Alabama. St. Matthew Lutheran, Stony Plain, Alberta, Canada. Holy Cross Lutheran, Moline, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Munster, Indiana. St. John Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Calvary Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Reformation Lutheran, Afton, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Lima, Ohio. Risen Lord Lutheran, Taylorsville, Kentucky. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Crystal Lake, Illinois. And Trinity Lutheran, Elmore, Ohio. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues, Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes a congregational sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues, Etc. journal, the Issues, Etc. 300.